You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your first look for this week's Open Championship. That's right. And joining me to break it all down, Sia Najad is here. Sia, not only do we have the odds, we've already got the DFS pricing. This is like Christmas Day for you.
Kid in a candy store. It's another major. Let's get after it. I'm really looking forward to this week.
Let's get after it. Rounding out our team for today is Greg Ducharme. And not only is he the third member of our team, but he is the birthday boy. Greg, happy birthday.
And we've dated the show already. a minute in, as tradition calls for. But yeah, thank you very much, Rick. I'm 30 years old today.
Wow, the big 3-0. How do you feel?
a lot older than I did yesterday.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. That's how it's supposed to work. Gentlemen, we have a major championship, the sixth of the season, the final one, Sia, of this super season. Here we are. We've had five amazing winners and storylines up to this point, and now we get the Open, in which we did not get last year. So technically, the champion golfer of the year, still Shane Lowry.
Yeah, and that he'll be an interesting play this week as well. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Royal St. George's, I guess, Rick, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we haven't been there since 2011. I'm very interested to see how this course plays, especially whether or not wind comes into it, because I think, obviously, if wind isn't a huge factor this week, then, you know, it might play a little easier than people expect. But either way, I think it's going to be a great test, especially for some of the American players who aren't as accustomed to the links style course.
I'm absolutely amped for Royal St. George's. You know, Greg, it's some people will say it's easier than most of the Open courses, but you're really at the mercy of wind, right? You're at the mercy of weather. The idea that sometimes it can change and kind of flip how you thought this course was going to play. There are just a lot of variables at a lot of Open championships that the players do not control, which I always think is fun and always good to see.
Yeah. And even though it may be, it's hard to judge because it's hard to judge the Lynx courses because they're so weather dependent. So Carnoustie, which is considered one of the hardest courses in the world without wind, is gettable at times. If it gets extremely firm, that's a completely different course than if it's rainy. And the wind is obviously a huge factor as well, which will be the storyline of the week. I was looking at a 10-day forecast. So you're a little bit out there, but it doesn't look like we're going to get rain past Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I'm kind of expecting a slightly softer golf course than what we've seen in some past opens. But the wind looks to be about 15 to 20 miles an hour from some variation of the north all 4 days is the way it looks right now. So we'll see if that changes at all. But that tells me, one, wind's going to be a factor. Two, the air temperature is going to be a factor. Looks like it's going to be below 70 all 4 days as well. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, but I'm not necessarily expecting a brutally challenging test. But I still think there's going to be a lot of variance between good scores and bad scores because there's so many unique breaks you can get in an Open.
Yeah, the margins are small. The bunkers, these pop bunkers kind of have magnets to them. Your ball gets attracted over there. A good shot or an okay shot can turn into a bad shot pretty quickly. This is going to be the 15th time we've seen Royal St. George's host the Open Championship. Sia, you're absolutely right. The last time was 2011. And of course, with most major championships, especially an Open, it is just as much of a mental game as it is a physical game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think you kind of have to factor that in. And as this week progresses, I think I'm definitely going to be kind of considering who I think is sort of up to the test if things kind of go awry. And I know that gets a little narrative-y. Greg, thanks for the shout out earlier a couple days ago going down narrative street. But the long story short is I'm definitely looking for guys. And that's sort of why I said I'm looking for guys who might be a little bit more accustomed to link style courses, because I think there's a certain expectation that you draw when you have that experience. Whereas if you're a guy who maybe doesn't have the requisite experience, all of a sudden, you know, things go awry and it, you're just, it's just not expected, and you deal with it a little bit differently. So I'm really looking forward to actually doing the DFS show, because I think I'm going to stray a little bit from some of the normal guys that I usually pick.
Before we get into the names that are playing, there are notable WDs here via a combination of positive COVID tests, contact tracing, just kind of the logistics of getting over there, or maybe getting yourself ready for the Olympics. Here's the hopefully full list, and we do not add to this, Greg, but Hideki Matsuyama officially out, Bubba Watson out, Matthew Wolf, Kevin Na, Cameron Davis, Siwoo Kim, Sung Jae Im. But despite that, we are still going to get, what, 90 of the top 100 players in the world. I mean, it's going to be an absolute stacked field, even if we are missing these names, and hopefully these are the only names.
Hopefully. But quite frankly, Rick, I think it's doubtful. I would expect to see a couple more. And hopefully that it's not the stars. You are still going to have a great field no matter what. But this is why the protocols are the way that they are. Because the once you have the contact tracing regulations being so strict, where if you come in contact, vaccinated or not, positive test or not, you have to withdraw. Whereas here on the PGA Tour, you get tested every day if you're subject to that contact tracing. There, it's a withdraw. So if you don't have really strict guidelines for your players, if you don't have your players kind of in their own little bubble, you run the risk of losing the whole field. I mean, it could spread so quickly because everybody turns in contact with everybody, and you get a couple guys sharing a house, and all of a sudden that whole house is out. So you have to be careful if you're the RNA, because you're under these strict guidelines from the government. So that just kind of is what it is. But because it's so strict, I do expect, sadly, I expect to see a couple more WDs.
Well, we'll certainly be keeping a close eye on it as the week develops. But as of right now, the top of the betting board, the big names, absolutely stacked. And it's John Rahm, Sia, who is getting the nod from our friends over at William Hill as the favorite, and a pretty significant one at that. The last time we saw him on the PGA Tour, he was winning the U.S. Open. The last time we saw him anywhere in the world was a seventh place finish at the Scottish Open last week, which is an event that if he just putted kind of a little bit better, he probably runs away with it. He was in contention all week long. John Rahm, seemingly well-deserved as the favorite.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, looking at the number, though, I'm actually surprised he's as much of a favorite as he is, to be honest with you. I don't know, maybe you know what William Hill has him, but I've seen him at plus 650, and that just seems really short. So it's not a number that I'm ever going to consider from a betting standpoint. But I'll tell you what, as we look at Rahm, I mean, I honestly think that, you know, it goes Rahm, Dustin, Rory. I don't know that I wouldn't put Brooks ahead of Dustin, and maybe ahead of Bryson. So I think it's really interesting how this sort of top tier has played itself out.
Well, Bryson is catching a lot of steam over at William Hill. So John Rahm, 7-1. That's half the odds of the next guy, who is Bryson DeChambeau at 14. Rory McIlroy at 16-1. And then Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka at 18. You know, when I look at the list of names beyond John Rahm, Greg, you start to have more questions than answers in some cases. You know, what is the state of Bryson DeChambeau's game, and can that translate to an Open Championship? Is Rory McIlroy's victory at the Wells Fargo Championship now just an outlier? Dustin Johnson hasn't been good this calendar year. I mean, there's a lot of questions for a lot of the big name guys who are going to try to be sipping out of the claret jug come Sunday evening.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions. But these players are the best in the world for a reason. They're the best in the world because they can answer these questions for us with their play. But the questions that you mentioned, Rick, one with Bryson, his success at past Open Championships has not been there. That's why I'm surprised to see him at 1400. Sia was talking about how excited he is for the DFS show on Monday. And one thing I find so interesting about an Open Championship is things that we normally look at, normal metrics, play a much smaller role this week. It becomes one of the more challenging events to handicap. But what does strokes gained off the tee mean in an Open Championship? I don't know. I mean, it's not as clear to us. What is, so anyway, what kind of style does a player play with? And if you look at some past results in Open Championships, I think you see kind of a combination of a few things. There's a group of players that always seem to be top 25 guys. They understand how to play links. They're very good players, maybe not on that board. And then there's the random guys that pop up and pop in there that don't have any consistency. Maybe they love the golf course or just had a great week. So I'm very much looking forward to it too. But to me, Brooks Koepka and Jordan Spieth, along with John Rahm on that board, are the three guys I feel most confident about personally.
Yeah, to put a bow on Bryson DeChambeau, three starts at an Open Championship, two missed cuts, and a 51st. Jordan Spieth, we haven't seen since the U.S. Open. And Brooks Koepka, I think it's weird because Brooks is really only kind of graded on wins. It's easy to forget that three of his last four starts have been top five finishes, a runner-up at the PGA, a fourth place finish at the U.S. Open, a fifth at the Travelers, always plays well at the Open Championship or any major championship. So yeah, that early in the week, I've got my antennas certainly up for Brooks Koepka. But then there is a kind of a next tier, Sia, which includes your Justin Thomases of the world, your Victor Hovlands, your Louis Oosthuizens, these guys that we know are incredibly talented, and you're getting a number probably longer than we would normally get because of how deep this field is and how strong it is at the top.
Yeah, and of those names you mentioned, I think Louis is probably the guy I like the most for a couple of reasons. One, his major experience, well, I shouldn't say experience, his major success, and just the fact that he's obviously going to be a little bit more accustomed to the link style course than some of these guys like Victor Hovland, who just frankly doesn't have the experience here. So Louis is definitely a guy I'm focusing on in sort of that second range. I think Cantlay is interesting, especially if you look at his number at, again, I'm not sure what it is at William Hill. I've seen it around 33-1. And I think that's a pretty good number for Cantlay. I think he can make something of this course. So those are two guys in that second tier I'm focused on.
Patrick Cantlay, certainly 33-1. And outside of that mini slump that he had for 4 or 5 weeks, he's been absolutely phenomenal. Greg, I think this is a really weird situation where, you know, we missed a year of this, right? We didn't postpone it. It was canceled. It never happened. We never saw the 2020 Open Championship. And with how accelerated the careers of some of our young guys have been, it's hard to believe, but Colin Morikawa and Victor Hovland are teeing it up for the first time at the Open Championship. I mean, it's almost a little jarring considering what Morikawa has 4 wins in a major. Hovland has 2 and a European Tour victory, and they've never played an Open Championship before. It's going to be fascinating.
A unique aspect to it. So how much does experience come into play? I don't really know. I think there's an avenue where it's valuable. I do believe that it's valuable. I believe a Lee Westwood can really lean on his Open Championship experience to put together a really nice week. But at the same time, is it a prerequisite? Excuse my use of that word there. But anyway, is it required for you to have success there? I don't know. I don't really believe that it is. But you got to find a way to get comfortable on the golf course. The thing I like about Hovland is his attitude, and Morikawa the same. Both of those two players will be able to handle the difficult situations that come. You hit a ball down the middle of the fairway, it hits on the wrong side of a knob and shoots into a bunker. Are you going to get upset about that, or are you going to kind of laugh it off? And we've seen Hovland make this year in particular a number of messes, if you will, on holes and answer with great success. I mean, a triple bogey on the very first hole of the Masters. And he came back to have a really nice week. What do you make, a 9-on-9 at the concession, and nearly won the tournament? So I think there's a lot of positives that those guys have, where although they're rookies, I don't know if I really look at them as rookies at this point.
You also continue to find some of these, you know, up and coming names or guys with plenty of talent. Joaquin Niemann 60-1 on this board, Sia, and you start to get down to the 60s, the 80s, the 100s, and you wonder how deep could you go in a field like this, at an event like this. I tend to think that an Open Championship of all places is, it's kind of chaotic. You're at the mercy of a lot of things that players don't control, and even good shots can go awry. I don't mind venturing down into the triple digits of the betting board, but what say you?
Yeah, I don't mind either. And by the way, before we even get there, I think there's some nice numbers on guys like Patrick Reed as well in that kind of 40-ish to one range. But yeah, when you get to like 50 to one, I mean, Brandon Grace, for example, or do you get to the 60, 66 to one range with a Harris English, for example? Yeah, I mean, it's Harris English is playing so well lately. He's so under the radar at this particular event. I think 66 to one is a really great number. A guy I never take, but actually looks to be in a much better form and perhaps a little bit healthier. I mean, you're seeing Jason Day numbers at 80 to one. I mean, I think some of these guys with like legitimate Open Championship experience and legitimate link style experience in that 50 to 80 to one range, I think are very much viable here.
We talk about experience, Greg, from an Open Championship perspective, but some of these European guys who might be more apt to the link style of golf, with all, which offers you an opportunity to play the ball on the ground, someone like an Alex Noren, someone like a Robert McIntyre, maybe some of these guys that reside on the European Tour, are they more interesting this week than most? Because this should be somewhat of a more comfortable setting for them.
Yes, to a degree. I mean, the European Tour plays some links golf, but not all links golf. And I mean, remember, that tour is extremely global. They play a swing in the Middle East, in Dubai and all those kind of places of the world. That's not really links golf. They play a number of events, even in England, that's not necessarily links golf. So while there's more of it, it's not like it's all links golf. And then you also have the Alex Norens who are playing a lot of the PGA Tour. And most of the big names are playing on the PGA Tour. And, it, you know, it's also interesting if you look at some of the past winners of this event. Is there a common thread here? If I read you these names: Shane Lowry, Francesco Molinari, Jordan Spieth, Henrik Stenson, Zach Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Phil Mickelson, Ernie Els, Darren Clark, Louis Oosthuizen, and then you had your Stuart Sinks, Padraig Harringtons, and Tigers, and things like that. My point in that, Rick and Sia, is they're not as it's not like we get a Ben Curtis or a Todd Hamilton every year. Those right. are very unique cases. And I don't think they're more unique than any other major championship. I think if you looked at past winners of PGA championships or US Opens, maybe not Masters. I think you get a very similar number of quote unquote random kind of winners. All those guys were playing quite well when they won. So it's interesting. What's that style? Are those guys all links players? We look at them as links players now because they've won an Open. Right. But going into it, would you have said that Francesco Molinari was a great links player? I mean, he was playing on the PGA Tour and was playing great. He won at some Parkland courses, both in the U.S. and also in England. So I don't know. And in Italy, it's very interesting to me. But I kind of think this tournament does lead to great champions, really, really solid players still win this tournament, despite all the fortune that goes into it.
I love it. Obviously, this week is going to be a big one for us. We've already mentioned the Monday DFS preview, the Megapod on Tuesday, round by round recaps, golf in the middle of the night. It's going to be a lot of stuff going on. And Sia, we have not even mention the fact that Sam Burns is $6,300 on DraftKings and everyone is going to lose their mind. Just prepare yourself for that on Monday, right? That's a conversation we're going to have to get into.
Well, I got to be honest. Yeah, that's a really interesting price for Sam Burns, but a lot of that 6K range and low 7K range, I think, and just like, I mean, this is other majors as well, of course, but there's a lot of guys, maybe not as mispriced per se as a Sam Burns, but there's a lot of fodder there between like that 60, let's say the Sam Burns range and like 7,200 for you to really mm-hmm. stack your Brooks Koepka with, let's say, your Louis, and maybe you want to throw a Patrick Reed out there. All of a sudden, you've got about 7,100, 7K left for three other guys, and there's plenty of talent there.
There you go. Little tease for Monday's DFS show. Join us then. But for now, let me thank producer Jacob. He does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there is Sia Najad. You can find him on Twitter at Sia Najad. And Greg Ducharme, wish him a happy birthday at The Real GFD. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
everyone is talking about if.
I'm going to go on a limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting!
If. Rated PG. Now playing in theaters.